All right, we are holding on Chaf Dalet Amud Beis, the second line from the bottom. We said in the Mishnah that there's such a thing as Nidre Havai, where a person makes a neder, which is an exaggeration, or even an outright lie. So we said the Ran explains there are two cases. One where he says, "I saw a number of people, the number of Olam Mitzrayim, the number of people who left Mitzrayim, 600,000, where you can't possibly have seen that many people on this road." And by the way, I mean, the question was brought up in the class on Friday. Why can't we say that means he saw them sequentially? But Pashtus, because we go according to Loshen B'nai Adam, in Nedarim, we go according to the common understanding. And when a person says, "I saw Baderech Hazeh," on this road, means that he saw them all at once, or at least in a short amount of time. And you can't possibly have counted that there were 600,000 people on that road in that short amount of time. Anyway, so that's an example of an exaggeration. He saw a large crowd and he's exaggerating and saying it's Ka'ilim Mitzrayim. Or another thing we have in the Mishnah, he says, if I didn't see a nochash, if I didn't see a snake that's the size of Kodas, that not the size, we're going to see in the Gemara, it doesn't refer to the size, actually, a snake like a Kodas Beis Habad, like the beam of an olive press that's used for crushing the olives, which we're going to see in the Gemara what the exact point of comparison is. Anyway, so the Ran explains, there you don't even have such a snake at all, as we're going to see in the Gemara, and therefore it's not even just an exaggeration, it's a flat out untruth. But still, we can't consider such a thing a neder, because if he actually meant that the object that he's saying, this should be also to me, if he meant to make an actual neder, he would have said something truthful, or he would have just said it without any condition at all. The fact that he's saying it like that means it's not meant to be a neder. Now, we had two different girsois. We had the Ran versus the Rosh, whether the Gemara had drawn a comparison with Shavuos. Was the comparison that we said that the Ran's girsa was that Nidre Havai are mutter and Shavuos Havai are also mutter, meaning that if a person did a Shavua using that kind of thing, then also the object would be mutter? Or the Rosh's girsa and that of many other Rishonim is that no, neither the Gemara is contrasting and saying with Nedarim it works, with Nedarim it doesn't work and the thing remains mutter, but with Shavuos, with a parallel example of that with a Shavua, such a thing would be osur. For example, so we said in the Gemara, if the person says, let's say, a shvur, that all the peiros in the world will be osur to me if I did not see the number of people on this road, Ka'ulam Mitzrayim, well, since in fact you didn't see them, then again, according to the Rosh's Girsa, we would say that therefore the fruit is osur to him. Because in fact, he didn't see that many people. And according to the Ran's gear, so we would be saying it is similar to a neder in that regard. It's only Havai, it's only an exaggeration. And therefore, in fact, the Peiros would not be also to him. So now the Gemara asks, Omalei Ravina L'Ravashi, the Dilma Hai Giv Gavra, how do we know? You're assuming all this time that the person is saying a neder or a shavua that involves saying that he saw that many people on the road. How do we know B'chlal is talking about people? The Doma Hai Gavra Kina de Shum Shumani Chaza. Maybe this person saw an ant hill, saw a group of ants, the Apiklon Shema Ola Mitzrayim, and he nicknames them Ola Mitzrayim. He says, "I saw," in other words, when he's saying, "I saw a number like Ola Mitzrayim," he doesn't mean people, he means ants. And then Vashapa Mishtaba. And in that case, his Shavua is a real, because he really did truly see that many ants. Or he may well have seen that many ants. You may not be able to see 600,000 people all at once, but you might be able to see that many ants all at once. There's even an explanation that he may have been looking in the direction of Mitzrayim. Mitzrayim is southwest of Eretz Yisrael. So there's even an explanation that somebody showing him say that he may have been actually looking in that direction and seeing a group of ants coming from there and say, "Hey, look, they're over Mitzrayim." They're actually, so not even talking about the number, but look, they're coming up from Mitzrayim. So how do we know that that's not what he meant? So now, again, according to the Ran's Girsa, we would say that therefore it should be considered a true Shavua. And according to the other Girsa, according to both Girsa, it would be a true Shavua. But either way, according to the Ran's Girsa that we said that Shavuos Havai a Mutter, why should the object be Mutter? And or not really, why should the object be mutter? The object is already mutter because we say it was Shavuos Havai. But maybe actually we would say that he's saying that such and such should be also to me if I did not see Ola Mitzrayim. Well, in fact, according to his definition, he did see Ola Mitzrayim. Therefore, yeah, the fruit's not going to be also to him. So the question is not really why it should be also, but why is the Loshen of the Braisa implying, why is the Loshen of the Braisa, which we quoted before, which contrasted Nedarim and Shavuos, or compared Nedarim and Shavuos rather, according to the Ran, why would it be implying that if it weren't for the fact that it's Havai, then it wouldn't be a valid Neder? We could say it's not Havai, it is in fact, there is in fact something that he saw, which can be called Ola Mitzrayim, but because he formulated his Shavua in such a way that these Peiros should be also if I didn't see it, implying that they're not also if I did see it, well, he did see it. According to the Rosh's, Gir said that the Gemara had been contrasting, that the Braisa had been contrasting, that Nidre Havai, the object remains mutter, but Shavuos Havai, the object becomes osur. Then the question would be, why is this Shavuos Havai? On the face of it, we could say he did. He saw what he claims to have seen. It's not the usual definition of Ola Mitzrayim, but nevertheless, it is a definition. Why should we say that in fact the Peiros are also? Shouldn't we say then that the Peiros should be mutter because in fact he did see something that's Ola Mitzrayim? V'shapa mishtaba, he's swearing correctly. Omale, so Rav Ashi answers, ki mishtaba, because when a person makes a shvua, adaita didan mishtaba. When he's making a shvua, he's making it according to our das, meaning the way that people usually understand things. So, in other words, the Ran explains, we're not explicitly telling him swear according to our das, but nevertheless, we can't assume he's not allowed to claim later on that his shvua was on something in his own das. It has to be on the das of what we ourselves, what the average person would say. Either the Rosh teaches out, we don't believe him, even if he says that he meant ants, we don't believe him because that's a very unusual thing to say. The Ritva actually says maybe even we could believe him, but we'd still say Botla Daita Etzokolonim. Nobody, no regular people define things like that. Define that ants are called Ka'ur Mitzrayim, and therefore doesn't matter what you had in mind, you can't consider that your Shavuah was correct on that basis. We, when we hear a shvua where somebody said that I saw Ka'ulam Mitzrayim, it doesn't occur to us that it should mean ants. So therefore, so it's considered a shvua's Havai, and then you have the two different girsais and the two different explanations, whether the result is that whatever it was that he asked himself to do with the shvua, whether it's going to be also to him or not. So the Gemara asks, "Val daita de nafshe lo ovid inish de mishtaba? Really, you're telling me that a person does not usually swear about something on his own das, we don't say that he can come up with his own definition and his shvua can be valid according to it. V'hotanya, I'll show you a braisa that seems to say the other way around. A braisa says shehein mashbiyin oisoi. When dayonim are beswearing a person in Beis Din, so we know you have the different cases, midaraisa and midrabanan, where a person has to swear in Beis Din. So when, before they make him swear, omnim lo, Beis Din tells him, hebe yedea, you should know, shaloy af tnai shabalibcha onim ashbiya noisach, we're not beswearing you based on any tnai that is in your heart. Rather, it's based on our das and on the das of Beis Din. So our das would mean the Beis Din down here, and das Beis Din would mean the Beis Din Shalamayla. There's different girsois over here in Masechta Shavuos, where it also mentions this point. It has a slightly different girsa. Whatever the case, the point is they're telling him, don't think that you can make up your own definition of what you're swearing on over here, and then you can claim, but I was swearing truthfully. Rather you should know that what you, for example, so the Ran says, we're talking about, let's say, a moedim miktas. So let's say, for example, so we have a classic moedim miktas. Reuven says, you owe me 100. Shimon says, no, I only owe you 50. So midaraisa, Shimon has to swear. So Beis Din is telling him, don't think that you're going to be able to play any games over here. Don't think that you're going to think to yourself, for example, I paid him 50 some previous time, let's say, or whatever. or something like that. No, it's going to be on our das. We know that what you're swearing on, our understanding of your shavua that you're going to be taking now is that in fact that you only owe him 50, that you already paid him back 50 of this particular loan, and don't think you're going to think something else. So la poki mai. Now, so the Gemara says, why would we have to tell him that? What would that be coming to exclude? Lav la poki de asik lo le skundere. Wouldn't we be coming to exclude, for example, a case where he might be taking iskunderi, which the Ran explains means little chips or checkers of wood, va'asiklo in shmozuzi, and then he claims them to be, he calls them money. So in other words, what could conceivably happen if we allow him to swear on his own das? It sounds like what he could do is he could take 50 checkers, claim that those are the equivalent of $50, claim that each checker represents a dollar, and give them to Reuven. And then later on, when he swears, then he'll be saying, I paid you 50, and he's going to mean 50 checkers, or, you know, to put it in modern terms, $50 in Monopoly money. And really, of course, that's not what we need. So therefore, we would have to be telling him that don't think you can do that. So wouldn't that show that unless we have something like that, unless Beis Din explicitly tells him otherwise, then yes, we have a right to assume when a person is making a shvua, he's making it on his own das. So Beis Din has to specifically tell him, don't think that you can get away with having redefined checkers as money. Sorry about that. I had a glitch over there. Somebody called me in the middle. Okay. So what are we excluding? We don't want that he should be defining checkers as money, let's say, or defining chips of wood as money, and then claim I paid the money. But in other words, if Beis Din hadn't told him that, it sounds like it would be not acceptable, but it sounds like he would be able to get away with that. So doesn't that show that a person can take a shavua on his own das? So by the same token over here with the case of the ants, why can't we say that his shavua about that he saw in that many ants in fact constitutes a valid shavua? The answer is loy. The answer is that no, that's not what Beis Din needs to exclude. Not where he might redefine something, because that he wouldn't be able to redefine with any kind of shvur, but rather la puki mikanya derava. Rather, it's to exclude the possibility of him trying to act like the case of the stick involving rava. The story is dahu gavra dava masik bechavre zuze. There was a person who was demanding payment of money from somebody else. So Reuven was owed. Reuven had lent money to Shimon, and now he's demanding payment from Shimon. So the case was brought to Rava, So he says, Reuven rather says to Shimon the loiva, go pay me. Omale praticha. So he says, I paid you already. And omale Rava imkain zilishtabale de prate. So Rava says, in that case, you have to swear that you paid him. Now the Ran explains that we have to be talking about where he was moedu b'miktsas, where Shimon admitted that he had paid part of it, but not the whole thing. Because the Gemara, the next line in the Gemara is going to say that he held on to a sefer Torah and swore. Now, if it was a shvur jirab, now, midaraisa, there's only three kinds of shvurs, and one of them is moedu b'miktsas. But midaraisa, kofer hakol, when a person denies the entire claim, he does not have to. Midaraisa, when a person denies the entire claim, he does not have to swear, only midarabanan, there's a shvurs heses. So now, Shavuos Heses had already been, the Takana had already been made by Rava's times. It was made in the time of Rav Nachman, who was Rava's Rebbe. But the Ran says you wouldn't have to hold a Sefer Torah for that. So we have to be saying that he had to swear a Shavuos Daraisa. That would mean that he was Moedim Mitzah. So here the Ran says the Gemara is not getting into that level of detail because this is not the place where the Gemara is talking about these Dinim of Shavuos, of Moedim Mitzah. And all here the Gemara is just mentioning it incidentally. With that said, though, With that said, though, the Ritva that says that actually it was only a Shvur de Rabbanon, and he says, you see from this, that even a Shvur de Rabbanon, a person has to hold a Sefer Torah. So in fact, it's a machlokas we're showing him whether that's the case, whether by a Shvur de Rabbanon does the person have to hold a Sefer Torah or not. Anyway, so here, so Rava told him, go swear. Zila Shtabalei Deprate, go swear to him that you paid him. Also, Ba'aisi Kanya, so the man went. Now, the pastors, when he tells somebody to swear, doesn't necessarily mean that he has to swear right there on the spot. Maybe they give him a certain amount of time to come up with the rest of the money or to bring aid him or what have you. So in any case, during that time, he went and got a hold of a hollow stick, the Yohib Zuzi Begave. He put the money, he put the coins inside the hollow stick. And now when he came back to Beis Din, he was holding on to the stick and using it as a walking stick and walking into Beis Din. So now when it comes time for him to swear, he says to the Malva, Nekoi tai kanya biyodach, please hold the stick in your hand because I need to hold the Sefer Torah to swear. And then Nosav Sefer Torah v'ishtaba depare kol ma'ad avalei biyodach. And then he took the Sefer Torah and swore that he had paid everything that he was supposed to. The Ran says, actually, you can't say that he actually literally said the words that I paid you, because as we're going to say in the second, where we know already what happened. We know that he had actually given him the stick just to hold on, and therefore he could truthfully swear that he gave him the money. Paying him the money would imply that he actually told him this is in payment to the debt. And of course, he hadn't done that. So the Ran rather says the Girsa should be that he swore carefully, he chose his words carefully, that I gave you everything that I was supposed to. Well, there's a Dadesh Depari that he paid him, that he gave him, Koma to have a libyode, whatever he had in his hand. Well, Hahu Malva Rogaz, the Malva got very angry because he knew that was untrue. He hadn't been paid back everything. The Tavralahu Kanya, so he broke the stick in his anger. The Ishtapach, Hahu Zuzila, Hanu Zuzila Ara, and the coins fell out onto the ground. The Ishtakach, the Kushte Ishtaba. So it turned out that this guy had actually, that Shimon had actually sworn truthfully. He had validly sworn, when he gave the stick to Reuben, he was able to correctly swear that he had given him the money. Shimon didn't know about it, and if Shimon hadn't gotten angry, then he would have given back the stick and he would have never been the wiser. That's the point. In other words, that's why Beis Din, when they make a person swear, they have to carefully tell him, don't think you're swearing on your own das. Be aware that you're swearing on our das, meaning our das is that you actually paid him the money in the sense that actually you gave it to him and he knows the debt has been paid off, not, for example, that you gave him a hollow stick full of money. In fact, this story is also in the Gemara in Shavuos. And in fact, Tosfos points out over there, Rava would have known that point. So therefore, we have to say that over here, the guy grabbed the Sefer Torah and took the Shavua before Rava could stop him. So in other words, had he not come into the Beis Din with the walking stick, when it came time for Rava to be swearing, he would have told him, like we just said, make sure, be aware that you're swearing al datenu, al das Beis Din, and then he wouldn't be able to get away with the stick trick. But like this, when the guy came back into Beis Din with the stick, he right away told them, before Rava had a chance to say anything, he right away tells the Malva, hold on to my stick, and he grabs the Sefer Torah and swears. And if it hadn't been for the Malva getting angry and the stick breaking, then nobody would have ever discovered what he did. There is, by the way, actually a Medrash that tells a very similar story. And there it names the loiva, the one who played this trick. It calls him Bart Malia. It seems there are places where it seems that Bartmalion was a nickname that they used in those times for troublemakers. So it may be that that's not the guy's real name, but rather they nicknamed him in the story Bartmalion, like we would say nowadays, the troublemaker. In any case, that's the story. So we see there. So the point is, in other words, it's not when we beswear somebody in Beis Din and we tell him, be aware that it's al datenu of al das Beis Din. It's not to prevent him, for example, from redefining the meaning of the word money. Where, for example, he would claim that ships of wood are money and then be able to claim that he paid that, but rather to prevent him from doing something like this trick with the stick, where after all, the fact is he did, in fact, give him the money. He just didn't give it to him in a way that we would expect that we would call a payment, because he was preposterous, he would have gotten the stick back and nobody would have been the wiser. So that's the kind of thing we need to prevent against. Okay. So the Gemara says, "Va'akati." Still, you're telling me, "Lo yovid d'mishtaba adaita d'nafshei." Still, you're telling me it never happens that a person swears on his own das. Always, when a person swears, we assume that it's the standard definition of what he's saying and of the words that he used. And therefore, to go back to what we were saying before, we can't say, for example, that he saw a bunch of ants and are calling them ka'ulam mitzrayim. Why not? V'hatanya, we learn in a b'raisa, v'chein matzinu b'moshe Rabbeinu, the same thing as we were saying that when Beis Din is beswearing somebody, they make him, they tell him that you should know it's on our das and the das of Beis Din Shamayla. In a similar way, b'moshe Rabbeinu, k'shish b'yais Yisrael b'aris mayav, when Moshe Rabbeinu was beswearing the Jewish people in aris mayav at the end of Chumash Devarim to keep the whole Torah, Omalahem, he says to them the same thing. Be aware that I'm not swearing you on your own das, such that, in other words, you should be able to redefine words as you want. Rather, it's on my das, on my understanding, and on the das of Hashem. So don't think that you can redefine terms and be able to get away with it. So Ne'emar is, in fact, the pasuk says, "V'lo yitchem levadchem b'gomer." Hashem, Moshe tells them in Parashas Nitzavim, it's not with you alone. That now, in the simple sense, the pasuk is saying it's not only with you, but rather, as the next pasuk continues, but rather everybody who's here and anybody who's not here, because it includes the neshamas of future generations. But we're also understanding that it means, so the Ran explains, if that's all it meant, then you already have. The next pasuk says that. He says, as asher yeshne poi, v'es asher inenu poi. So why would he be having to add that preamble, v'loi itchem levadchem? Because the v'loi itchem levadchem means another thing. It doesn't just mean not only with you, but rather also with future generations. It means not only with you, meaning it's not only up to your understanding of the Shvuah, it's up to mine and Hashem's understanding, and therefore don't think that you can reinterpret the Shvuah and be able to get away with it. Now, why would he need to be saying that? My Amalahu Moshe Yisrael. So what exactly is it that Moshe is expressing with that to the Jewish people? Lav Hochi Karmalahu. Wouldn't we have to say that that's what he's telling them? Dilma Avidtun Mili. You might later on do things that are against the Torah, or Hagos Habach says the Girsa should be Avritun Mili. You're going to be over on words of the Torah. V'amritu Avamritun Al Da'atenu. And you're going to say it's on our own das. Because in other words, you're going to say that we made the Shavua on our own das. So, and that would explain why he had to tell them that the Shavua is on my das and on the das of Hashem. Now we have to ask, La Puki Mai, what is Moshe trying to exclude by that? Lav La Puki Das Siku Shmo La Avodas Kachavim Elika. Wouldn't it be because they might use the name Elika to refer to Avodah Zarah. And so therefore, so what's going to happen? He's going to make them swear, you have to keep the mitzvahs of Elika or Elikim. They're going to say, okay, well, we decided that the name Elika refers to Avodah Zarah. And therefore, when they go and worship Avodah Zarah, they're going to say, well, what do you want? We swore that on our das, that it means we're going to worship Avodah Zarah. Ha, 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 we got away with it. And therefore, Moshe is telling them that not. So doesn't that show that a person can create his, or that ordinarily a person can create his own definitions and then swear based on that? The cloud of inish mishtaba daita dinafshe. So doesn't that demonstrate that a person can create his own definitions and swear according to that? So then in that case, applying that to the case of the ants, the person could see a whole bunch of ants, maybe even 600,000 of them, and say that I saw Ka'ula Mitzrayim, and it would be a true Shavua because he did see 600,000 ants. The answer is, Loi. The answer is that's not why. Because it's not a matter of redefining. The fact is, Avodis Kechavim, Ikri Elika. The fact is, Avodah Zarah itself is called Elika already. We find, for example, a pasuk where Hashem says, that I'm going to execute judgments and punishments against all the gods of Mitzrayim. So we see that there are any number of, and that's not the only place. There are many other places in Tanakh where the name Elikim or Elika refers to Getchkes. So therefore, it's not even a matter of redefining. They could say, yes, we're swearing that we will listen to everything that Elikim says, but again, they could claim later on that Elikim, that when we said the word Elikim, we meant an alternate, equally valid definition of Elikim or Elika, meaning a Getchke. And therefore, Moshe has to tell them you can't get away with that. But not, for example, that they could, let's say, But let's say, for example, not that they could, not that they could claim, let's say that that something that's not a god at all should be called a cat, and claim that we're using that definition, that they wouldn't be able to do. So therefore, the same thing, the person can't say that he saw ants and claim that it was Ka'ir the Mitzrayim. But if you have something else that there is a reasonable definition, a reasonable person could understand Ka'ir the Mitzrayim to refer to this, then it would work. The same way a reasonable person can understand that the word Elekim or Eleka refers to Avodah Zarah, just as Lahavdil referred to Hashem. Now, in that Gemara, this whole Gemara is in Shavuos as well. Tosfos points out a couple of things over there. First of all, so then in that case, why does Moshe need to do that? Let him use the name Havaya. Maybe Mela, the name Elikim, sometimes, or other names of Hashem, sometimes refers Lahavdil to other deities as well. But the name Havaya, on the face of it, is the exclusive name of Hashem. So if he tells them Havaya, what excuse? If we were saying that a person can redefine things, then fine. They could say, well, we decided to name this other Getchka Havaya, and therefore we could get away with it. But now we're saying you're not able to do that. You're not able to make up your own new definitions. Well, then what's the problem? Let Moshe tell them. Make sure you listen to whatever Havaya tells you, and we're good. Tosfos explains that actually there's a Gemara there further on in Masechta Shavuos that discusses different places in Tanakh where you have names of Hashem that could be understood as Kodesh or as Chol. You have, for example, certain places in Tanakh where it uses the word Elikim. Does it mean Hashem or Lahavdol? Does it mean a Getchke? And similarly with other names. So, and the Gemara has a whole discussion of it over there. And it mentions over there that in the story of Pesel Micha, near the end of Sefer Shoftim, the names that it mentions over there are all Chol. They all refer to Getchkes, even though there are names of Havaya mentioned over there. So in other words, there you have the story of the idol of Micha, where the Kohen, the priest who was ministering to that Avodah Zarah, to that idol, used the name Havaya several times in connection with it. So therefore, we see that even the name Havaya can be misapplied to Avodah Zarah. So therefore, Moshe telling them that you have to listen to what Havaya says wouldn't help. Then Tosfos asks another question. Listen, if you're worrying about that they're going to worship Avodah Zarah, then what good does it do to be swear them with a Shavuah anyway? So they'll be all around the Shavuah. What's the difference? How is that going to help? So Marashah there explains, because this is the Shavuah with which they're accepting the Torah. If the Shavuah is not Chal, then yeah, they're not going to be punished for violating the Torah at all. So we have to understand, therefore, that the Shavuah itself is Chal, and so he's not concerned. So yes, they could violate the Shavuah. Then they're going to be in trouble for it. But the alternative would be that what we're concerned about is they're going to claim we are keeping the Shavuah, but we're keeping the Shavuah according to our understanding of the Shavuah, and therefore Moshe has to forestall that by telling them, sorry, you can't get away with your own understanding of it. But again, the point is, the Gemara is establishing over here, and also in Masechta Shavuos, that it's not a matter of them redefining words to take the word Elika, or Elikim, or even Havaya, and redefine it to something else that has never been called that before, which would be the example, like we're saying here in the Gemara, of taking ants and calling them Olam Mitzrayim, which nobody else has ever done before, but rather saying that there are alternate definitions. The same name, Elika or Elikim, or even the name Havaya, can sometimes be used in connection with Avodah Zarah. So therefore, that's why Moshe has to tell them that you need to follow my Das and the Das of Hashem. Okay. So the Gemara asks still, why does he need to tell them that lashon? The lash by yasin demekay mitun mitzvahs. Why doesn't he beswear them that they should keep mitzvahs? And how are they going to get away with that? Where mitzvahs doesn't seem to imply Avodah Zarah. So the Gemara answers, they could understand that means mitzvahs hamelach. Still, the word mitzvahs could mean the mitzvahs of the king, which there you have two meanings what that could mean. It could mean the actual commandments that the king tells you to do, and the Rosh brings, after all, we have the Loshen in Megillas Esther, when Mordechai doesn't want to bow down to Haman, and the ministers and the other ministers of Achashverosh are telling Mordechai, Madua ata oira, eis mitzvah samelach, why are you disobeying the command of the king? Now, obviously, to bow down to Haman is not a mitzvah of the Torah, it's a commandment of Achashverosh, but we see the Pesach is calling it a mitzvah. So again, they could get away with, you know, they say Jews make very good lawyers, right? So like this, the Yidden with could use the excuse that with mitzvahs doesn't mean mitzvahs of Hashem, it means mitzvahs of the king. A different explanation that the Mefarish printed under Rashi's name over here says, mitzvah samelech means the mitzvahs that apply specifically to the king. You have in Parashat Shoftim, you have a section over there of seven psukim that talks about the mitzvah to appoint a king and the mitzvahs that are binding on the king. So fine, the Yidden could get away with the excuse that we only accepted those mitzvahs on ourselves, not the rest of the mitzvahs. So therefore, telling them to fulfill the mitzvahs wouldn't work. It wouldn't accomplish all of that. The Hagoyes Abach actually has a different version. He moves around things in the Gemara over here, which actually you have a parallel Gemara in Shavuos, again, that goes through the whole thing and does much the same kind of argument, much the same kind of discussion, why Moshe had to tell them Al-Daiti, Al-Das HaMokim, rather than choosing a more careful expression to begin with, that automatically would tell them to fulfill the mitzvahs. So there, the Gemara has the same thing as here, but in a somewhat different order. So Hagoyes Abach changes things in the Gemara over here to conform to that order. But we'll stick with the order that we have in front of us over here. Okay, so what about V'lashba Yosa Nimakai Mitzvah and Kol Mitzvahs? Why doesn't he beswear them that they should keep all the mitzvahs? That they can't get away with saying that it means the mitzvahs of the king or the mitzvahs about the king. The answer is Mashma Mitzvah Tzitzis. If he said that, then it would imply only the mitzvah of Tzitzis. Dama Mashkula Mitzvah Tzitzis Kineged Kol Mitzvah Shabbat Torah. After all, we learn in a braisa that the mitzvah of Tzitzis is equivalent to all the other mitzvahs of the Torah. Or Issa Moisa is Chartam Mitzvah Mitzvah Hashem. The Rosh points out the famous thing that we know Rashi mentions in the Psukim in Parashat Tzitzis about the gematria of Tzitzis and the number of strings and the number of threads and the number of strings and the number of knots, that it represents all the mitzvahs. So they, if he told them keep all the mitzvahs, they could later on be over on most of the mitzvahs in the Torah and say, yeah, but we were fulfilling the mitzvah of Tzitzis and that counts as the equivalent of all the mitzvahs. And therefore, in order to forestall that, Moshe has to tell them it's al daiti val dasamah. Okay, what about, the Gemara says, the lash by Yasin, Dimkai Mitun Torah. Okay, never mind the word mitzvahs then. Why doesn't he beswear them that they should keep the Torah? The answer is that won't work either. Mashma Torah Achas, because that would imply one Torah. So that would imply either Torah Shavuchsav or Torah Shabbat Peh. And we know they have to keep both. Okay, the lash by Yasin, Dimkai Mitun Torah. So why doesn't he beswear them that you should keep Torahs? What kind of excuse? How could they claim what else could Torahs mean if not Torah Shabbat and Torah Shabbat there? The answer is it could. Mashma Torahs Mincha, Torahs Chatas, Torahs Osham. You have various sections in the Torah about Korbanos that are introduced with the words Zois Torahs this, Zois Torahs that, Zois Torahs Chatas, Zois Torahs Osham, and so forth. Zois Torahs Mincha. So if he told them keep the Torahs, they could later on claim, okay, so we violated most of the mitzvahs in the Torah. So what? We fulfilled our shiur in the most literal sense. We kept the Torahs about Korbanos. So therefore, Moshe can't use the word keep Torahs. Fine, the lash by Yosin Nimkai Mitzvah Torahs and mitzvahs. So why does he tell them keep Torahs and mitzvahs? Same problem. Torahs mashma Torahs and mincha. Mitzvahs mashma mitzvahs amelach. Same problem. If he says Torahs in the plural, it could mean the Torahs of the Korbanos, and mitzvahs would imply the mitzvahs of the king. You still haven't covered all your bases. Fine. What about v'lash by Yosain, v'lish by Yosain, dem kaimitum Torah kula? Why can't he beswear them that they will keep the entire Torah? The answer is Torah Kula, Mashma Avodas Kechavim. If he just said Torah Kula, that would imply just that they shouldn't worship Avodah Zarah. The Tanya, we learn in a Braisa, Chamur Avodas Kechavim, Shekola Kofa Ba, Kila Modim HaTorah Kula. Avodah Zarah is a very stringent, a very severe thing that if a person denies Avodah Zarah is equivalent to admitting to the truth of the whole Torah. So they could get away with doing all kinds of other averas as long as they don't worship Avodah Zarah, then they'll be safe. So that won't work. So Moshe can't use the expression that they should keep Kol HaTorah Kula. Fine. V'lishba Yosin Nimkai Mitzvah Avodas Kechavim B'Torah Kula. Fine, but why can't Moshe tell them, I'm beswearing you to keep the mitzvahs about Avodah Zarah as well as Torah Kula. So once we've mentioned Avodah Zarah specifically, then saying Torah Kula implies all the rest of the mitzvahs. inami, or another way that, or another way he could do it, he could say shlosh meyers or shloshes, shesh meyers or shloshes mitzvahs. He could tell them explicitly, accept on yourselves and accept the shvuah that you're going to keep all 613 mitzvahs. So why can't he use that? So the Gemara says, you're right. Ultimately, he could have used one of those lashonas. Ela Moshe Rabbeinu milsa d'lo tricha nokat. Rather, we have to say Moshe Rabbeinu wanted to use a wording that doesn't have that much tircha. Instead of having to go through the long thing to say, make sure you keep avodah zarah and all the other mitzvahs, or make sure you keep all 613 mitzvahs, he just says, he can say in general, keep the whole Torah, and I'm swearing you, I'll die to you, I'll das hamokim, that you can't play games and you can't claim later on that kol ha-Torah or Torah just by itself or mitzvahs just by itself means something else. It means what I have in mind, which is all the mitzvahs, and it means what Hashem has in mind, which is all the mitzvahs. So again, the Gemara in Shavuos has much the same discussion with some variations. There, the Gemara ends up saying a different. There, the Gemara ends up finishing in a different way. That the Ran brings it over here. That he said in that case, still the question is, why can't he just say I'll die ti? Why can't he just say it's on my das? Why does he have to add that it's based on Hashem's das as well? And the reason is the Gemara explains in order that this way they can't do hafara. Like this, if he says, keep the mitzvah, if he says, I'm beswearing you to keep the mitzvahs, and it's on my das, later on, they could be matir neder, maybe. But like this, when it's al das amokim, then there's no way to be matir neder on it, and therefore they can't get away with it. So here, the Gemara doesn't mention that point, because again, it's a different Gemara, it's a different context. Here, we're not mainly focusing on the dinim of Shavuos, here we're mainly focusing on the dinim of Nedarim, and we're just mentioning Shavuos incidentally, so therefore the Gemara doesn't really have to go into that level of detail. Okay, in any case, so we've established, therefore, that when a person makes a shavua, he can't later on claim that he was redefining words. He could say, for example, that the wording I used has multiple meanings. That would be valid, like we're saying over here. For example, the guy could claim, for example, that when I swore that I gave you the money, I didn't mean I gave it to you in payment of the debt, but rather that I gave you a hollow stick full with the coins, and now you gave it back to me, and ha ha, I got away with it. Because that's a reasonable redefinition of the word. When you say you give somebody, it could mean giving him permanently, or it could mean you give him temporarily. You give him over the stick with the money in it. But to redefine things, to say, for example, that I saw Ka'olam Mitzrayim, and later on explain that you didn't mean 600,000 people, you meant 600,000 ants, that you can't get away with. And therefore, in Beis Din, they don't have to tell the person to avoid such things. He can't later on claim, for example, that I gave you chips of wood and those count as money. I define those as being money. And similarly, the Jewish people over here, they couldn't claim, for example, that when Moshe tells them to listen to whatever Hashem says, to say, yeah, but we're using the name Hashem to mean something else. Rather, they could say, though, that Elika or Elikim does mean something else. It can mean avodah zarah, and therefore we had to go through this whole discussion of why he has to use the exact wording that he did in order to prevent them from doing that. We said in the Mishnah, Im lo ro'isi nochash koras beis habad. We said that a person might make a neder that such and such should be also to me if I did not see a snake like the beam of an olive press. So the Gemara is assuming we're talking about the size. So the Gemara asks, lo, you're telling me there's no such thing possible? V'ho ha'hu chivya dehava b'shnei shavur malka. It happened that there was a snake that lived in the time of Shavur Malka, Shavur, or Shabur, or however the name is pronounced exactly. There were actually a few kings of Persia of that name. One of them was in the times of Shmuel. And in fact, there were a few places in the Gemara where the Gemara itself calls Shmuel Shavur Malka, like he's the king of Torah, like Lahavdil Shabur was the king of Persia. We find in a few places where that Shabur was quite friendly with Shmuel. There was a later one in the time of Rava. Anyway, there were a couple of them. So which one it was, we don't know, but whatever. In his times, there was a gigantic snake like that. Ramule tlesa urvosa de tipna. They gave it 13 urvosa of straw. So urvosa, the Ran explains, means the word urvosa in Hebrew would be urvos, means stables. So they gave him 13 stables full of straw, and he ate all of them with bola yosin, and he ate all of them. There are different other girsois that the word is not urvosa, but rather udrosa or something udrisa or something like that, which means bundles. This Gemara is also in Masechta Shavuos. Rashi over there explains why were they giving the snake so much to eat. The problem was, it actually explains over there, this snake was actually eating people. So they wanted to kill the snake, but it's such a huge snake. How are they going to be able to kill it? What they actually did was they played a trick on it. They made up gigantic bundles of straw. Inside each bundle, they put the carcass of an animal, and inside the carcass, they put live coals. So now the snake is going to be attracted to the bundles because it's got carcasses of animals in there that it can eat. So it's eating them one after the other. As it digests them, the coals burn through the bodies and eventually set the straw on fire. And eventually the snake is killed by a fire inside its belly. So that's how they killed it. So the point is that so obviously it was a very big snake if it could eat so much straw and then bundles of people or whatever. So what's the problem with a snake being the size of a beam of an olive press? So the Gemara answers, we're not talking about the size of Amashmul Betoruth. The answer is, Shmuel says, we're talking about that he's describing that the snake, is Toruth. Now there's many different explanations of what Toruth means. The Ran says that it means that it has grooves on its back. So in other words, its back is not smooth, but rather it's got grooves in it. The Rosh explains that it means instead of it being wound, usually the top side of a snake, the upper side of a snake is going to be rounded. Instead, here he's claiming that it was flat. In fact, the Yerushalmi brings in this connection, the expression "Ein meruba misheishes mebereishis." You never find anything that was created by Hashem during the 6 days of creation that's naturally square. So therefore, you're not going to have a snake that is naturally square in cross section. As the Gemara is going to say in a second, we're talking about the back of it. That the back of it is going to be rounded. The Rambam has a similar explanation in Pirush HaMishnayos that what mean is, in other words, he says that we're talking about the cross section of the snake, where the Gemara is going to end, based on how the Gemara is going to end up explaining, means the person is claiming that the cross section of the snake is like a tombstone, flat on the bottom and round on the top. Then the Mefarish over here says another meaning, that Toruf can mean that it has spots on it. So the Gemara asks, so Kula Nechoshi Mitzraf Tarfi. What do you mean? Many snakes are like that. Many snakes have, if you say it means grooves, many of them have snakes, many snakes have grooves on their backs. Many of them are round like that. Many of them are spotted all over. And the answer is, the Gemara says, Gaboi Toruf Kamunin. We mean specifically the back bit. So according to the Ran, the vote would be, snakes in general have grooves on them, but only by their neck, not on the rest of the body. So here, where he's claiming that he saw a snake that has grooves all down the length of its body, then it can't possibly be true. According to the Rosh's explanation, you would say that it means that he's claiming that the back of it is flat, just like the belly of it is flat, which is not so. Snakes are going to be flat on the belly and then rounded on the top. That's this Ein Merubah Misheishes Mebereishis. Hashem did not create anything in Sheishes Mebereishis that's naturally square in cross section. The Gemara ends up saying over there, the Yerushalmi ends up saying there are certain exceptions to that. It ends up saying, I think that it's only in the world of Chai, not necessarily Doimim and Semeach. Anyway, according to the Mefarish's explanation, again, snakes are not going to have, they don't have spots all over the place. They have spots on parts of their bodies, but not on all of it. Okay, so the Gemara asks, if we're saying that it's Toruf, according to any of these definitions, then why in the Mishnah did it use the expression that he saw a snake, Kodesh Beis Chabad? Why not say straight out, listening Toruf? Let the Mishnah say straight out that he claims to have seen a snake, that is Toruf. The answer is Milsa Agav Urche Kamash Mulan, because the Mishnah, by the way, the Tana of the Mishnah, wants to incidentally inform us, Dekoda Spesabad Gaboi Toruf, that a beam of an olive press is Toruf on the top side of it, like we're describing, according to these various definitions of Toruf. The Gemara says, Lamay Naftamina, why is that important for us to know? And the answer is Lameka Homemker. It's important as far as buying and selling. Loi Maloch, it tells you, when a person sells a beam of an olive press to somebody else, e gabo toruf ein, if the top side of it, if the back of it is toruf, according to these various definitions, ein, then it's a valid sale. Ve'i loi, and if not, then not, then it's a mekach toruf. So for example, if we say, like the Ran says, that we're talking about grooves, the idea would be, The idea would be when you're crushing olives, you want that the bean should not be smooth. You want it to be grooved. You want it to be rough so that it'll do a better job crushing and pressing the olives. If you say like the Rosh that's talking about square, then it means that you want it to be square. If it's going to be rounded, if it's going to be rounded and cross-sectioned, it's not going to do a good job of pressing the olives. If you go according to the Mefardish, that it means that it has, and also Rashi and Shavuos says this as well, that it means that it has spots, that apparently the idea is that a beam of an olive press, you would expect to have spots on it, because Mestama, it's been used for that purpose before, and it's gotten spots of oil all over the place. The point is, in other words, you can't say, for example, well, I sold you a beam. All you have to do is make it into something that you can use, carve it or do whatever you need to do to make it into the shape or grooved or whatever that you need for an olive press. No, you have to sell them something that is ready to be used for an olive press as it is. Otherwise, it's called a mekhtos. So the Mishnah, so the Tana of the Mishnah is hinting at that by mentioning this idea where he claims to have seen a snake that is kikodas beisabad, and we're understanding, and Shmuel tells us that kikodas beisabad means toruf. Mishnah says, now we come to the third group of Nedarim. We said at the beginning of the parak that there are four types of Nedarim that Hitiru Chachamim, that the Chachamim said on Mutter, meaning, so we discussed at the beginning of the parak, we had Rav Asi saying that you still need to go and be Matur Neder by a Chacham, maybe you'll need to Rabbanan, and Shmuel had said that no, the Mishnah is saying Hitiru Chachamim, so it means that you don't need to ask a Chacham at all, they're automatically bottle. So the third group was called Nidre Shgogas. So what does that mean? Nidre Shgogas, Nedarim of Shgoga, of inadvertent Nedarim. So it means, for example, the person says, Ima Chalti V'im Shasisi. Suppose the person makes himself a neder, and he says, on condition that I ate or that I drank. So he says, for example, if I previously ate today, then this food that's in front of me, this loaf of bread that's in front of me, should be koinam, should be also. Now, V'nizka Sha'ocha B'shasa. Later on, he remembers that he did, in fact, previously eat and drink. So that was a shogeg. He thought that he actually hadn't eaten, and it turns out he had forgotten that, in fact, he had eaten. Similarly, if he says shani oichol v'shani shosa, similarly the other way around, he says this item will be koinam to me if I will eat or I will drink v'shachach v'ochol v'shasa, and later on he forgets and eats or drinks. So the Ran explains that actually, therefore, the Mishnah is telling us two different cases. One is that at the time of the Nedu, he was already shogeg because he had forgotten that previously he had eaten. And then there's another one where he's shogeg when the Nedu is going to come due. So when he said the Nedu, he wasn't shogeg. He truly meant to say that if I eat or if I drink, this object will be also to me. But later on, when the Nedu comes time for the Nedu to be in effect, namely when he eats or drinks, at that point, he was shogeg. Because at that point, he forgot that his neder depends on that. So then either way, the neder is not chal. Those are both examples of nidre shgogas. Continues the Mishnah, another example. Omar koinam ishti nanasli. A man says, a koinam of anything my wife should be able to have anah from me. In other words, he's putting his wife off limits to have anah from him. Shagunvas kisi, and the reason is he's saying because she stole my money bag. Or actually, the Ran explains we're not talking about where he actually says it. If he says it, then for sure we wouldn't even be talking about nidre shgogas. Then it would be a neder tos, because then clearly if we find out that later on, in fact, that wasn't the case, then it means it was all based on a mistaken premise. But here we're talking about he didn't even say it explicitly. He was thinking it at the time. The other way around, sorry. The Ran says that it would have to be that he actually said so. He's saying, I'm making a neder that my wife should be also to have anah for me. And he says the reason, shagunvas kisi, v'shehiksas me, because she stole my money bag or because she hit my son. V'noida shleikatu, v'noida shleigunva. Later on, he finds out that, in fact, she didn't steal the money or she didn't hit his son. So in other words, it's considered a shgaga because he wouldn't have made the neder. He wouldn't have made the neder if he knew the facts. So therefore, it was all based on a mistaken premise. So actually, so the Ran, we learned this a few days ago. We had this in the Gemara on Chabez and Beis. The Gemara had mentioned this point. The Ran discusses over there actually that there are different possibilities. Do we say that, excuse me, we talked about over there, suppose the person makes a shvua be'lekei Yisrael with Hashem's name, where we said we don't want to be matir such a shvua with the exception of something like this. So the Ran discussed over there, maybe in a case like this, it wouldn't even need to be that he said Shagon versus Kisi, etc. Just the fact that it would be because of Sholom Bayis maybe is a reason enough to be matir the neder. Because if we're talking about a case like this, then we're saying in our Mishnah, it's Nidre Shkogas, you don't need to be matir it anyway. Our Mishnah is saying you don't need to be matir such a thing. So the Ran discussed it a few days ago. Anyway, the point is, you were talking about that he actually said Shagon versus Kisi. If not, even though he had that in mind, the fact is he did say that my wife should be also to have anah for me. And therefore, even though it turns out it was based on a mistaken premise, then therefore it would still be considered a valid neder. But if he said the reason why he's making it, and it turned out that that reason was wrong, because in fact, the thing hadn't happened, she hadn't in fact stolen his money, she hadn't in fact hit his son, so then that's called nidre shkogas. A third example, the Mishnah says, Ra oisan oichun te'enim, a person sees from the distance people eating as figs, va'omar hare aleichem korban, so he calls out to them, he says, those figs are korban to you, meaning that they're also to you as if they were a korban, which is a valid way of making a neder, and again, they being his figs, he has the ability to aser to them. V'nimtzu oviv va'achiv, then when he comes close, so he realizes that the group includes his father or his brothers, and with them are other people. So now, would he have made the neder? So actually there are two different girsois over here. One girsa is that we have the word vihoyu, which is how we have it in front of us in the Mishnah, which means it's all one case. He finds that in that group, there's his father or his brothers, and other people as well. So some of them are people who he never would have wanted to ask. So he would have had no problem with his father or his brothers eating his figs. But now, the group includes them, but it also includes other people. The question is now, is the neder chal on the other people? The other way of understanding is that the girsa would be hoyu, meaning that's a new case. The case of nidre shkogas would be where the entire group would be his father and his brothers, where therefore he wouldn't have made the neder in the first place if he had known that. Now we have another case. What if the group is mixed? What if it includes his father and his brothers, but it also includes other people? Now the Mishnah would be telling us that there's machloikas. So Beshama imim hein mutarim or mashi imam asurim. So Beshama says only the father or the brothers would be mutter to eat the figs, but the other people who are with them would be osir, because Beshama, now this is called neder shohuta mitzasai. This is a neder where part of the neder was canceled, because again, he wouldn't have made the neder against his father or his brothers. He would have had no problem with them coming and eating his figs. He only has a problem with the other people. So Beis Shammai holds, though, that fine, when you have a neder that's partially canceled, it's only canceled to that extent, but not the whole thing. So we don't say, therefore, the whole neder as if it didn't exist. We say that the people who he never meant to include in the neder are mutter, but everybody else remains also. So again, if we say that the Mishnah is talking about one long case, then it means that Beis Shammai is disagreeing with this whole concept of nidre shkogas and saying that to the extent that they're, or not disagreeing with the whole concept, they agree with the basic concept, but they're saying, in other words, that within nidre shkogas, we have to distinguish between the ones that he wouldn't have meant to aser and the ones that he did. Whereas if we say that it's two different cases, then we're saying that Beis Shammai says that in the case where it was only his father or brothers, then yeah, they're all mutter. But in the case where it was other people, then they'd say it's only the fathers and brother, and only the father and brothers are mutter, but everybody else is also. Or Basilo says everybody is going to be mutter because they hold neder shohuda mechtsase, huter kule, once part of the neder is canceled, then the whole thing is canceled. And the idea is, in other words, the Ram says, if he had known that his we're going to discuss this whole matter of neder shahuda mikzase hutar kulay. We're going to primarily discuss it tomorrow, Bez Hashem. But the Ron explains, in other words, if he had known that his father or his brothers were part of the group, he would have explicitly said, then he would have explicitly said, everybody except for my father or brothers are also to have, or these figs are also to them. So therefore, so it's not called Pivvali B'Shavin. So therefore, since he didn't mean to ask to all of them, and therefore Basil holds that the neder is canceled entirely, and B'Shamai holds only on his father or his brothers, which we're going to take up that point tomorrow, B'Shamai Hashem. But first, the Gemara starts off, Tana, we learn in a Braisa, Kishem Shen Nidresh Shgogas Mutarin, just as Nidresh Shgogas a Mutar, as the various examples that we have in our Mishnah, Kach Shvuas Shgogas Mutaris, the same way a Shvua that was Beshogig is also Mutar. And Mutar, meaning not only that he's not going to be also in the item that he was going to, not only there's not going to be also to do the thing that he said, but also it means there's not even an Isser in making such a Shavur when it's B'shoyki. So the Gemara says, Hei Chidomi Shavur Shavuris, what is the example of Shavur Shavuris? What does that mean? So the answer is, Kigoyin Rav Kahana Rav Asi. For example, we have the example of the story of Rav Kahana and Rav Asi, who were both Talmidim of Rav, Hodein Omer Shvuasa Dehochi Omer Rav. After they had learned something from Rav, later on, they would be arguing about what Rav had said. So one of them would say, I swear that this is what Rav said. The other one would say a Shvua that Rav said this instead. So on the face of it, one or the other of them has to be false, but it's not considered, it's considered Shvuas Shgaga. So it would mean, in other words, that if he were to say, for example, so one way of understanding it is that suppose that Rav Kahana and Rav Asi, suppose one of them would say, I swear that if Rav did not say such and such, the way I hold, then I will be also to do such and such. Even though it turns out that Rav did not say that, nevertheless, he won't be also in the item that he said because he thought he was swearing truthfully. He thought truly that Rav had said what he said. So each one is swearing based on his own true understanding of what it was, and therefore it's considered Shavuos Shogeg. And the point is, the Ram says, now obviously there are many other cases of Shavuos Shogegs. For example, all the examples we had in our Mishnah of Nidrei Shogegs could just as well be Shavuos Shogegs. The same way as we said, for example, that a person could say that I will be also in this and this fruit if I ate today, and he forgets that he had already eaten today, and we say that's not valid. Obviously, the same thing would be true with a shvua. The point is that even in cases like this, even though each one, Rav Kahana and Rav Asi, they're arguing between them what Rav says, each one on the face of it should be choshesh that maybe the other one is right. So how can he take a shvua to the contrary? Nevertheless, it's still considered a shvua shvua. On the other hand, the Tosfos Yeshanim says that there is after all a difference between Nedarim and Shavuos. We've said a number of times in the Masechta that Shavuos are more chomer, they're more stringent, because on Shavuos it says Lo Yenakash and will not clean up a person from a Shavuos Shav. So therefore he says that the Gemara actually needs to ask that according to Tosfos Yeshanim, the Gemara is asking all the cases of our Mishnah, you can call them Nidrei Shgogas, but if you did the same thing with a Shavua, it wouldn't be considered a Shavua Shgoga. It would in fact be considered a false Shavua. So what is the example of a Shavua Shgogig that the Braisa is saying, which is okay? And the answer would be this example of Rav Kahana and Rav Asi. And then there's other points also that there's a difference between Lahabba and Lashavar. There's a difference between in the past and in the future. But the point is, in other words, that these shavuos are b'shoigig because each one of them sincerely believe that this is what Rav in fact taught and that the other one is mistaken. And therefore we can say when it turns out, even if they later on ask Rav and he clarifies like one of them, the other one's shavuos is not chal. So we'll continue tomorrow, Best Hashem, and we'll analyze this whole matter of what we said at the end of the Mishnah about Neder Shehuda Mitzase, Hutar Kuloi, or not Hutar Kuloi. We'll discuss that tomorrow, Best Hashem. We'll get into the details of that.
Yes, Shekoyach.
Thank you.